Hi, this is John Griffin from Chapel Hill, North Carolina, and you are listening to the Pro Hockey News Podcast.
Welcome in to another edition of the Pro Hockey News Podcast. First line edition, shorthanded. I am Lonnie Goldsmith. I am the fill-in host today with producer extraordinaire in Denver, Richard Cote. Richard, how are you?
Oh, doing all right. You know, had that great All-Star weekend a couple weekends ago. We'll go over that with our picks. Just glad to have regular hockey back in the mix, and had an exciting finish over the weekend that we're going to talk about in a bit. But yeah, otherwise, things are going pretty well.
I think Nikita Kucherov might still be getting booed by the Toronto fans for that. I mean, you can't even say it was a half-ass performance. It was like way less than that.
Like quarter ass at least.
At best, maybe even eighth. It was terrible. But whatever, listen. And of course, congratulations to, and we'll get into it in the picks, pick review, but congratulations to Connor McDavid for winning the Connor McDavid Invitational.
Right. I feel like that was unfair to have him compete in that since he put all that together, but you know, who am I to say?
Maybe, but he's also the best in the world. So how do you not have him compete in it? He's the most skillful player right now. How do you not have him compete in the skills competition?
I mean, yeah, you got to get people to watch, but you know, it's
exactly
just,
right. Exactly right. Well, so a bunch of news broke this morning before we hit record, which is beautiful and very rarely happens. And oddly enough, it all is about Columbus of all the places.
So I think we could pause here and say that right now the Columbus Blue, like Columbus, is the center of the hockey world. How often can they say that?
Not very often. It started, actually, I'll say how it started later. The second piece of news to come out of it is the firing of Jarmo Kekäläinen, who had been the longest tenured general manager in franchise history. Almost 11 years to the day after he was brought in to the organization to be the GM. Columbus is the worst team in the East, with a 0.404 point percentage in 52 games, 16, 26, and 10. They won one postseason series, and it was a doozy. It was as a wild card, they swept the President's Trophy winning and record setting at the time, Tampa Bay Lightning, in the first round. But that was the lone series win in the Kekäläinen tenure. Are you surprised, Richard?
I don't know if it was high up on my radar because I don't really have Columbus high up on my radar. But I'm not terribly shocked that they had to make a move like this. They have had a dismal season, 42 points in 52 games. I know he's not directly responsible for this, but like a minus 41 goal differential. You have talent on that team. There is no reason why they are this bad. And as you had mentioned, that sweep of Tampa Bay, that was what, 2018, was that?
2019.
That's right. The 2018-2019 season. So 5 years ago, they've made a few other playoff appearances since. So they haven't been completely irrelevant. It's not like they're, it's not like they're Buffalo or Arizona where they're just constantly towards the bottom of the division. But this year is just exceptionally bad. Maybe the writing on the wall wasn't exactly in pen. Maybe it was penciled in, but you know, there was definitely some murmurs that there needed to be a shakeup. And I think they took the big step that every club needs to make in this situation and, you know, start from the top down. Let's get somebody new in who can bring in some new talent and see if we can turn this around in the next couple of years.
It's not like he hasn't had the opportunity to bring people in or pay people. Thanks to Cap Friendly, who compiles these things. And this is such a fun tool to have at our disposal.
Oh yeah.
In his tenure in Columbus, he signed 251 players to a contract value of $1.1 billion, drafted 74 players, and made 79 trades. I mean, and he signed, I mean, there's some monster contracts in there. Johnny Gaudreau is a free agent.
Mm-hmm.
A couple years ago, to a 7-year deal, Zach Werenski to a 6-year, $57.5 million total value. And again, that was a draft pick of his. So to be able to keep and reward, you know, homegrown talent, that's huge. But he has thrown some money around. Big contracts. One of I know Adam's favorite Blackhawks, he signed Brandon Saad after 3 cups in 5 years to a 6-year, $36 million contract. I think even, you know, most people scratch their head at that one. That was, they weren't cheap. They didn't do it on the cheap. And he had plenty of opportunity, but you know, they're now on their third coach of the season. If you want to include Babcock.
Sure. Let's throw him in there.
I mean, I think you have to, that is a hiring of his.
It is.
They've had opportunity. They've had their chance to make, to make some good decisions and, you know, bringing in Babcock, this was something I know we talked about at the time, was that Mike Babcock coaching a team of, largely young, very, high skill team is just feels so against type for him.
Mm-hmm.
And to bring him in that situation, it just wasn't the move to begin with. And well, gee, look how it panned out.
Right. Looking ahead, and I'm sure we'll touch on this here in a bit when we start talking about the trade deadline, but looking at some of the pieces that Columbus has now that they have a new GM who can start making a few moves, and looking forward to the NHL draft coming up in the offseason, they have a few pieces to work with. I mean, pretty much they're only missing their second round pick this year. So, John Davidson coming in and acting as general manager, he's going to have a little bit to work with. They got plenty of cap space too. So if they're looking to move around some pieces to get, another draft pick for this upcoming draft, this is a good position. If this is the person they want to move forward with as their general manager or to take over general manager duties, I think he's fallen into a sweet spot where he's pretty much hit the bottom. He's hit the basement. There's nowhere to go but up for this club.
Yeah. They may actually have their second round pick. It is the weird, it is a weird condition as part of the 3-team deal at last year's draft.
Right.
The Flyers and the Kings. Columbus has to decide after the 2024 first round is complete if they're sending a second round pick this year or the 25 pick, second round pick next year to Philadelphia. So depending on where they sit, they're not making the playoffs. The East is loaded anyway. They've got to decide if they want to keep what could potentially be somewhere in the, 33rd to 36th overall pick.
Right.
You got young enough talent. You want to keep that trade away next year's instead and gamble that you can't be much worse.
It would take some serious talent to be much worse than they are this season.
Yes. And yes, they are in a loaded Eastern Conference, and we'll do a quick run through on that in a sec, but we want to get to the other Columbus news, which is according to multiple sources, basically everywhere. pick your favorite news site. They've probably reported it. The Columbus Blue Jackets and the Horseshoe of Ohio Stadium on the campus of Ohio State University will host the 2025 Stadium Series game hosting the Detroit Red Wings, which I know we had kicked around when that rumor first started, I don't know, a month ago, maybe?
Right. A great venue. In no way am I an Ohio State fan. Really have any ties to the Buckeyes whatsoever. But, historic, great sports venue, a great pick. It's a shame that nobody's really going to watch because it's yet another outdoor game. And they're becoming less special and more of an obligation by the league at this point. Great place to put it. Good matchup. I mean, it's going to be a shame that the Blue Jackets are probably going to get trounced by the Red Wings, you know, in their home state. But A plus on effort, or A plus on the venue. I don't know, C on the matchup.
Right. I mean, listen, we can only hope that the Red Wings will trounce them. I can only hope. That's my bad. I can only hope that the Red Wings will trounce them. The Red Wings are far better as a road team in their outdoor games than as the one home game they've had. They lost in a shootout, so they've won the road games. First road game since Stadium Series at Coors.
Yep, I remember that one.
So it's been a while since Detroit, and it's frankly been a while since Detroit's been a draw enough to be put in an outdoor game. So, you know, I'm not mad about that piece of it. The venue is great. I think, you know, we've talked about this before. We're at the point where we want to have good venues.
Mm-hmm.
We want to have something that looks cool on TV. And Ohio Stadium is great. It is a great venue for football. I think it's going to be great for hockey as well. I think you could do, you know, you incorporate the marching band in some way with the dotting of the I like they do in the football game on that field. Like, there are ways that you can do cool stuff and make things really interesting and fun. And I think they should sell out to do that kind of thing, because you're right. These are getting sort of monotonous. Is that the right word?
I would say so. Yeah. It's becoming a chore anymore as a fan to schedule, you know, when is this game going to happen? Unless your team is in it and, you know, you'll watch because it's a regular season game. You'll probably watch that game anyway, whether they're outdoors or, you know, inside their own arena. At this point, it's like, well, okay, do I have to mark my calendar? As a casual fan, do I really care anymore?
I think that's accurate. That's an accurate take. And as we're, you know, recording this ahead of Stadium Series weekend 2024, where, you know, in a venue that is as sterile as it gets of just another NFL football stadium, you know, again, like we've talked about, you got to have the venue. And I think you have great venues next year for the outdoor games, assuming that this reporting is correct. Again, no reason to believe it's not. But you've got, you know, the Winter Classic of Chicago and St. Louis. You don't love the matchup, but you love the venue. They're going back to Wrigley Field as opposed to playing it at Soldier. Like Blackhawks have played home games at Soldier Field against the Penguins in the Stadium Series. The second Winter Classic against the Red Wings was at Wrigley and was fantastic. And then the game at Ohio Stadium. Like, those are great venues for this sort of thing.
Yeah.
I think, you know, this year you had Seattle, which was you had some scenery. It was, you know, the novelty of the two newest teams playing each other. But there's no novelty this weekend as we get into the Stadium Series games.
You know, what could, you know, spice up these games, maybe if some fan took in a chair from My Custom Sports Chair. You know, they can head over to mycustomsportschair.com, enter in code PHN15. They could get 15% off that amazing chair that they'd bring into the stadium. I think they'll allow them in the stadium. I don't know. I mean, you could try. Go order yours off of mycustomsportschair.com and see if they'll let you bring it into MetLife Stadium.
And if nothing else, you will have a fashionable and comfortable place to sit and watch the game from the comfort of your own home, if nothing else. So we have Stadium Series this weekend. My note in the rundown was yawn.
Yeah.
Help me out. Help make me think this is something I should watch.
The reason I would want to watch any of these games, it would have to be the second game, the Rangers game, because I want to see how those uniforms look on the ice. I think the Rangers got it right when it comes to those outdoor uniforms. After that, I don't know if there's much else to really like be excited about. I haven't even really, to be honest, I haven't even really seen what the stadium is going to set up looks like. What can you do besides having like a big apple back there? I guess it would be the uniforms is what I'd be excited about. And really, it's just the Rangers.
I'm not even sure I'm excited about those. I mean, the Isles want, like, could they have tried less hard on the Islanders uniforms?
They could have. They could have gone the route of the Flyers, because that to me seems like just a regular season jersey for them.
Right. It's their regular jersey with larger numbers.
Right.
And the Devils they're all sort of variations. Again, the Islanders aren't a variation on the theme. They're just bad. The other three are just sort of variations of what they sort of do a lot anyway.
Yeah. I like the Rangers with just the three letters. You know, I know that's, you know, they have the diagonal Rangers and, you know, that's what they're known for. That's iconic. Sure. Whatever. But, you know, they don't really change it up that much. They do different variations of that to have like a little bit newer feel to it, you know, because all the kids are dropping vowels out of letters these days and abbreviating everything. LOL.
Don't I know it.
It's just you know, it appeals to a younger fan base, at least in my opinion. The Isles, that one looked like I don't know, just an Amazon purchase for create your own jersey, and they ran out of characters to put in the middle. And the Flyers, they enlarged the numbers. The Devils, I kind of like. I rarely ever like black on red. Like, I rarely like that. This is one of those few cases where I think they pulled it off nicely.
I like the black on red in a photograph. I'm curious. I mean, like with all of these, I'm really curious how it's going to look on TV.
Oh yeah.
I think that's the one thing that there's maybe some question of how it's going to look on the screen when you're far away or, you know, zooming in different angles. We'll see, especially given that it's the night game on Saturday night.
Saturday night. Yeah.
Saturday night and then 3 o'clock on Sunday afternoon. So we'll see. We just have to see. I'm on the fence with that one, how it's going to look on TV, but.
Yeah. I'd be curious what the inside of the stadium is going to look like. I haven't seen any renderings at this point of like any of the decoration they're going to have beside the rink. That's, you know, besides the jerseys, that's kind of what I'm interested in. If my team's not playing in it, is how are they going to dress up the stadium? How are they going to make it unique? How are they going to make it very local? Until I see those renderings, I'll be tuning in to see that. My last note on why I'd be more interested to watch this than any others is this one's actually going to be on ESPN Plus. So it's actually something I have access to. So I'll actually be able to watch it rather than on TNT or some of the other networks where I'm not going to be able to get the game.
Okay. Fair enough. It will also be on ABC for those of you who don't have
that too.
For those of you who don't have ESPN Plus access, it will be available over the years.
Yeah.
Both games as opposed to the so many other games that are not.
Right.
Yeah, it looks like from the photos that are on NorthJersey.com right now, it's sort of a wide angle shot from the Zamboni door behind the goal. It looks like a hockey rink that was built in the middle of a football stadium.
Yeah.
So you're right. We'll just sort of have to see how it looks, you know, with people, with more colors happening in the, from the crowd, you know, the digital boards go and that kind of thing. But it looks like a hockey rink in the middle of a football stadium. So we'll just have to see the other, the extras that get brought.
Right.
So off the ice this week, we had the NHL Department of Player Safety jumped into the fray that occurred in the Toronto-Ottawa game last week, where Ridly Greig, rookie, decided to break an unwritten rule and wind up for a old school All-Star Weekend hardest shot slap shot into an open net from in between the circles. That so outraged Morgan Rielly, he cross-checked Greg to the head and got himself a 5-game suspension for it. We could talk about unwritten rules all you want, and we will in a sec. But Richard,
yeah,
for starters, was that the right number of games or was that too many?
To be fair, Riley did connect with Greg's hand before he hit him in the face. So it wasn't direct contact. No, it was direct contact. This was absolutely the right amount of games to suspend Riley. It's the end of the game. I mean, I know it's adding insult to injury, but the guy's on home ice. He can play it up for the fans. I feel like it's a little different if it's on the road and just putting so much insult to the fans in the stands as well. But this is his home ice. Greg winds up, fires that shot, whatever. You've at that point, you've already lost the game, whether he makes the goal or not. There's 6 seconds left. You're not going to score a goal from that end of the ice in 6 seconds.
Right.
Yeah, the game's already lost. Frustration hits, and so does Riley. Yeah, right amount of games. He's never had an infraction like this before, but I understand that, you know, emotions run high, especially when you have somebody, you know, blatantly disrespect your team like that. But I fully enjoyed it. I'm not even going to try and mask that. I enjoyed watching that immensely.
So, I mean, look, it takes a lot of guts for a player to stand up for the sanctity of their empty net by cross-checking an unsuspecting player to the head. So good for Morgan Riley. No, of course not good for Morgan Riley. To me, it falls under the category of, if you don't like it, don't get scored.
Yeah.
You know, you don't, this happens. I mean, there's the unwritten rules of other sports. I was texting with Adam about it before his vacation, and he's like, well, you don't show up, you don't celebrate a home run if you're up 10 to show up the pitcher. If you don't want to give up a home run, don't throw a meatball down the bed.
Right.
Right. This sort of, you know, falls into the same category. I have no problem celebrating goals. I don't. And if this is a way of doing it, so be it. I think if Riley really wanted to, you know, fire up his team and or defend the sanctity of the sport, drop the gloves and challenge him to fight.
Yeah.
To run him unsuspectingly stick high like that, that's cowardly. And it deserved all 5 games that he got.
That's a very good point. I never thought of that. Like, I mean, I was thinking maybe he should have gone lower, get him in the chest and into the hip area. I mean, that's still hurts, so it sends a message. But yeah, I never thought of he could have just dropped the gloves and they could have gone at it.
Right. You want to goad him into a fight and, you know, go get him that way. That's fine. To me, as the most ridiculous stuff to me was the comments coming out of the Toronto locker room after the incident. Coach, players, everybody basically defending his action. Because again, it's, you know, defending the sanctity of, you know, and the honor of their empty net. But, you know, John Tavares said, we obviously didn't like the result on the empty netter, so we're going to stick together and stand our ground when necessary. Again, I don't understand. Sheldon Keefe, the Toronto coach, saying, I thought it was appropriate when asked about his thoughts on Riley's decisions. And then of course, then Ryan Reeves, you know, PHN podcast favorite, was sent out for the final face off and officials quickly, jumped in to put a stop to it. You know, Sheldon Keefe went on to say he was reacting to a play. Their players were right to do what he wants in that moment. Our players have a right to react, and it's the emotions of the game. Again, like, is it more disrespectful to do that or to skate, you know, unmolested all the way to the goal line and then lightly tap, you know, basically walk it into the net? I don't know. I think either is I think that is more disrespectful. And frankly, on a slap shot like that, there's a chance you fall. There's a chance you miss. You pull the shot. Like, again, I think Greg was taking a whole lot of risk in the things that could have gone wrong.
Yeah. I mean, as somebody who has made a career out of just failing to connect on a slap shot, I know a lot can go wrong when you wind up for one of those. I don't know. We're talking about unwritten rules, and you were talking about the locker room defending Riley's actions. I think that that's yet another unwritten rule is you stand behind your teammate no matter what they do. You're going to lighten whatever happened. You're going to make light of it, or maybe not make light of it, but, kind of take the severity down a few notches because they're your teammate. Maybe you don't agree with it wholeheartedly, but you're there to defend them because, they're your brothers in arms, essentially.
Absolutely. Now, there, the great Sean McIndoe on Twitter at Down Goes Brown wrote a really great piece for The Athletic on the unwritten rules of hockey. And, I mean, I guess for starters, how do you know what's an unwritten rule? Like, what rises to the level of an unwritten rule if the rules are unwritten?
Right. I'm interested to hear some of these because I'm sure there are a few that I don't know.
Right. So he lists 20 unwritten rules and the ridiculousness rating on a scale of 1 to 10. So here we go. Unwritten rule number 3, don't get too fancy, even in a close game.
There you go. That's the one that Craig just broke.
Well, that also, actually, I think what he actually broke was, he broke several. Settle down around those empty nets and no showing up the other team when the game is decided. Don't get too fancy even in a close game. No, get as fancy as you want. It's A, you're skilled. B, it's a spectator sport. As a fan, I want to see cool stuff happening on the ice. If you don't like it as an opponent, do something about it.
Right?
It's on you to not get shown up. I believe if I remember, his lowest on the ridiculousness rating was unwritten rule number 4, stay on your own side of the ice during pregame warm-up. That's fair.
Yeah, you know, I think that's fair. Yeah.
I got no problem with that. It's perfect. You chat with your buddies. And as we saw, I believe a week ago, you're literally your brother when the Blackhawks and Wild played in the Battle of the Felinos. Yep. You chat pregame and then you go at it, but you stay on your own side. Good one. Keep pucks down while when the goalie is warming up. You don't want to put one off your goalie's face.
Nope.
The most ridiculous one, and this is one I have been guilty of, and thank God for some very nice media members here in Minnesota, where I unknowingly stepped on the logo in the locker
room. Oh.
Now, it was the... it was the smaller of the locker rooms that players go in for media access, as opposed to the larger locker rooms that they're changing in with the showers and everything attached. And the logo on the floor is huge, and the locker room is small. There is not a lot of space to work with it. It's insane how worked up they get. And this is the reason why you see more and more newer locker rooms putting the logo on the ceiling.
Oh, okay.
Rather than on the carpet itself, because God forbid somebody walks on the floor.
Unused real estate.
Correct. Listen, some of the locker rooms, fine, whatever. But if you're going to let media in, I know I was in one locker room, and it might have been for a Winter Classic or for a Stadium Series game, where they at least put they roped off the logo so you couldn't walk on it. At least do that.
Right.
But yes, there are some ridiculous ones. Let us know what your favorite unwritten NHL rule is if you can find them because they're unwritten.
Exactly. We need documented evidence.
That's right. And good luck finding that. Trade deadline.
Yeah.
It's coming up. It's 3 weeks away. It feels weird that it's so far away because we had that little pre-All-Star game flurry of trades.
Right.
Happened a couple of weeks ago, and then things got a little bit quiet, and now here we are. Time to start talking about it again. I know this is something that's come up on the second line. What are you, how have your thoughts evolved in the last week since the line two addressed this?
Well, how my thoughts have evolved is pretty much what has happened in Columbus. Starts to make me think that maybe they're creeping up my sellers list, knowing that they're going to want to start rebuilding that franchise in an image that is not their former GM's. So maybe they're going to have a few pieces that, you know, could be let go to create some draft capital as we go into the 2024 draft. But other than that, my buyers and sellers have stayed pretty hard and fast here. So I shared a couple of mine last week on the second line. And Lonnie, I actually kind of want to know, you know, I'll start with sellers. Who do you think is the biggest seller in the league right now?
I think I like Columbus. Problem is Columbus doesn't have, I'm not sure they have a ton that you want is the problem. Unless you're going to not take on a ton of money or term, I think you're going to be kind of hard pressed to, you know, make a big deal with them. I think Calgary is a team that could maybe look to move some other pieces. I think Pittsburgh might be a team. I think Calgary is an interesting one because they're in the, shall we say, less strong of the two conferences. Mm-hmm. They made the big move to get rid of their most sought after player, and they haven't gone away yet. So it looked 2 weeks ago like they were going to be sellers, but now they may yet end up deciding, nah, it's not worth chasing a wild card spot. There's so much that I know, I think Arizona should probably try to be a seller. You look at the standings, the Blackhawks probably should be too, but I'm not sure what they have to sell, honestly. The Wild have a Stanley Cup winning goaltender on their roster who may be looking for one last hurrah somewhere else. You know, Marc-Andre Fleury is a name that keeps coming up as a seller. Pittsburgh, seen some names of the name of Jake Guentzel for starters, who's a possible player who could be moved. So I think there's lots of potential pieces that should be moved. And again, it's really a question of, do you have the guts to do it?
Okay. I think you talked me out of Calgary. They were one of my top sellers last week. And seeing where they are, even in their own division, it is tough for them to make up any space. LA is falling quite a bit, which has brought them back into the mix of things, but Vancouver, Vegas, Edmonton, I mean, those are three solid spots in that Pacific division. Even if Calgary made some moves to push into the postseason, they match up against one of those teams. I don't think they're coming out of that round.
They are either, which obviously brings up the interesting, question of, like, I've always been a proponent of not standing pat.
Right.
Either I'm not going to say the expression I, you know, would normally use because this is a family show, but I would, I'm not a fan of standing pat. If you've got pieces to move, to pick up, pick up some assets for either prospects or draft picks, you got to do it.
Yeah.
The one thing I'll say is they have made their move. They took back Kuzmenko, which is not insignificant. Mm-hmm. But they had a first round pick. Like they took a big swing.
Right.
So if they chose not to do anything else from here on out, okay. Like that's I'd have a hard time hating that decision.
Right. My other two were Ottawa and Anaheim as my biggest sellers. I think Anaheim is moving close to that number one spot for me. Ottawa is still up there. I mean, they both have some pieces they could disband with. I think Anaheim is in a little bit more of a dire situation when it comes to the future of that franchise. But they do have some pieces that could be moved for either money or draft capital or, hey, even just some bodies to fill that roster out. They don't really have anywhere to go in that division. Ottawa, I mean, similar situation, but I feel like they're further into the rebuild than Anaheim is at this point. Correct me if I'm wrong.
They definitely are. You start playing in the expensive end of free agency like Ottawa did when they signed Claude Giroux, you need to be better than you've been right now.
Right.
They've had ownership issues. It's a, they're, I believe they made a coaching change this year already.
They did. Yep.
So it's like, I get it. It's a weird, they're in a weird spot, but like you signed Tim Stützle to a long-term deal. You've got Brady Tkachuk, Josh Norris is on almost $8 million per. You got Claude Giroux for one more year at 6.5. You signed Tarasenko with it. He's got a no trade clause, but I'm sure he would waive it for an opportunity somewhere. Batherson is one of your good young players. You take out Giroux and Tarasenko, those other three names are all under 25. Mm-hmm. Like it's a really young team outside of those two players.
Right.
And their goaltending. But it's they should definitely be better. And they've got so much money sunk in, and I just have no idea what kind of potential rebuild they're looking at. I mean, another rebuild is the problem. They've done this. Anaheim should definitely be better. They've got a weird roster. And so it's hard to know what kind of move they're going to make. It's on IR right now, but like Trevor Zegras being, his name being like, his name doesn't get out in the trade rumor world out of nothing.
No,
he's 22 years old. What exactly is happening that he's a possible trade piece?
You get a lot for him, but why?
I mean, he's on to a second contract. So it's not like he's not young and cheap. He's just young.
Right.
He's on 5.75 a year through the 25-26 season. So you're looking at two more full seasons of him. I mean, yeah, you probably have to give up at least a first, but I think taking on that, I mean, unless you're keeping some money back, it could definitely, impact how much is going, how much you have to give up to get him.
Oh yeah. I mean, it's, I think I'm seeing more of a chance that John Gibson gets traded, and he's got a no trade clause. So yeah. I'm sure he'll be willing to trade that if he's getting dealt to the right team, a team who's in contention right now. Otherwise, yeah, he's signed through the 26-27 season at 6.4 a year. Not bad money, but on a very, very bad team right now.
Right. I mean, he's a goalie at 30 years old, and it's a modified no team. He's got a 10-team no trade list. So there's definitely opportunity to move him.
Yeah.
And I think he's a good goalie. And there's the goalie, you know, he mans a position of need, shall we say.
Yes.
However, you know, he's an interesting case. In the 2021 season, in 35 games, he had a 298 goals against average. His goals against average has been north of three for four of the last five seasons. This is not the same guy from the 2016-2017 season who had a 222 goals against average and a 924 save percentage, and then played 16 playoff games with a 259 and a 918. Like, this is not the same goalie. And he got signed based on that season. The season after, where he had a 243 save goals against average and a 926 save percentage. I think he has a really big contract for a guy who I'm not sure is at that level.
No.
So, you know, want some salary back. There's some teams who might have a conversation, but I'm not sure, honestly, who that's going to be.
Yeah. Well, I know we just talked about teams who are, you know, going to be trimming up their roster, looking forward to the draft. If you're looking to trim up your features yourself, head over to our friends at Manscaped, manscaped.com/prohockeynews. Save yourself 20% off your purchase to keep yourself nice and tidy and clean, just like the rosters we were just speaking about. Lonnie, we talked about sellers. What about buyers? Who do you think is in the biggest market to buy right now?
I think to possibly be a buyer and have 3 weeks till the deadline is a way better space to be. Right now, like, it's a tough market. The two big trades that we've seen so far were expensive for the acquiring teams.
Mm-hmm.
I think Detroit needs help. We talked about goaltending. I think Detroit needs goaltending help. Alex Lyon's been really good. Billy Huso played 3 minutes against Edmonton and has returned from injury and promptly got injured again. James Reimer is your third goalie. They need goaltending help. I'm not sure if the goalies out there, like, I don't think committing to three more, you know, the next three seasons of John Gibson is a good idea. So we'd have to, you know, we have to sort of see, but I think Detroit is a little bit light in that regard. I think, you know, Jersey should be buying.
Mm-hmm.
I think Toronto, I mean, look, the East is stacked.
It is.
I think Boston could use not a ton of help, but I think Boston, Florida, Tampa, Toronto, Detroit, I think the top of the Atlantic could probably use just a piece of shoring. It doesn't have to be a huge piece, but I think an impact player for any of those teams is going to go a long way.
Yeah, I liked your point about Detroit and needing another goaltender, because the roster they have right now, to me, looks playoff ready, except for having a second goaltender.
Yep.
And if you're going to compete in the Stanley Cup playoffs, you need to have you don't need to have like a definite starter and then a backup. You need to have two decent goalies. You know, you'll have your starter and then somebody just as good backing them up. Otherwise, you're not going anywhere in the playoffs. And, you know, I've just found that to be true and true the more and more I've, you know, followed hockey into the postseason over the years. And recently, it's outside of what Boston did in the playoffs last year, I found that, you know, the team needs a good backup goalie. If you don't have that, you're not going very far.
That's absolutely right. Again, Alex Lyon has played really well. He's not young. He's 31 years old, and he is cheap, and he is just sort of, you know, this is the breakout season. He's figuring it out. He's putting it together. I think he's been better than you could have hoped for if you're Detroit going into the season. He's already played more games than he's ever played in a single season in the NHL by eight. He's almost mm-hmm. played as many games this season as he has in his NHL career, period. He will have done that by the end of the season, certainly, especially if Detroit's backups keep getting hurt. Right. So he's 31, but he's never worked. He's never had this kind of, at least at the NHL level. Sure. You combine it with my, you know, AHL stints. Absolutely. But
right.
He's been good. Just, you know, there's just something about this team. You watch them, they're fun, they're excited. The game Saturday afternoon against Vancouver was, you know, 3-1 down in their first game after a 10-day break for the All-Star game and the bye. Came back from 3-1 down to win it in overtime on a penalty shot. It was great. It was a lot of fun. And there was still something a little bit off about this team.
You know, he could probably use a little mentorship from somebody who's gone deep into the playoffs, maybe somebody who's on an expiring contract on a team who's not really going anywhere, despite the fact that they've won four games in a row. It's a team that's in your backyard, Lonnie. Marc-Andre Fleury, good fit?
Marc-Andre Fleury, I think, would be a really good fit. I think you've had a guy like him to a locker room that has a Patrick Kane in it. I think that's the kind of veteran leadership and stewardship that the team could use. I mean, James Reimer is sort of the elder statesman goalie at 35 years old. I mean, it's him and Ville Husso and Alex Lyon. It's like three backups, kind of.
I mean, Detroit's got the cap space.
Yep.
They have the cap space.
I don't think it's the kind of, I mean, it's maybe a second round pick.
Yeah. You're not going to have to give up too much for him.
I don't think you have to give up much. I mean, I think that's a guy that could fit. You know, and Minnesota needs assets. Now, I don't know who's going to be making the moves with those assets. I don't know what's going to happen with Guerin long term, but like Minnesota, right. They don't have a third rounder this year. They don't have a seventh rounder this year. The system is okay, but not great. I mean, I think it's not a bad move for them to make to even just get something out of it. Fleury is cheap with a full no move, but I think for an opportunity to get to a team that could get on a run, and I think the pieces are there where Detroit could get on a run. They've played Tampa really well this year. They've played Boston really well this year. They've played the competitors in the division really strong.
Yep.
So there's no reason not expecting a deep playoff run, but there's no reason why they couldn't be feisty.
Yeah. I mean, all you need is a feisty first round and you can make it to the Stanley Cup. Florida showed us that.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, I'm going to ink that down. That is going to be,
that's your call.
My prediction. That's the trade that needs to happen for Detroit.
All right. So looking at your backyard, let's look at the West.
Okay.
Colorado's in second place. They're 2 points behind Dallas. Stars have a game in hand. They did just add Zach Parise today.
Yeah, they did.
Is that their, I mean, it's not a huge swing. It's a, you know, solid, well hit single, maybe not a home run, but not bad. Yeah. What's Colorado missing?
That's a definite base hit. Colorado's missing is same thing Detroit's missing. They're missing a good backup goaltender. They could use a little bit of help on defense, but you know, they got some injuries. We got some people coming back. blue line is what it's been the last few years. It's manageable and it can serve you well in the playoffs. I mean, we're still missing the captain. That is a huge offensive piece we've been missing over the last two seasons, and it has definitely shown. Maybe he's back playoff time. He's been skating on the ice, but there's no chance he's coming back before the playoffs. So I don't know if you go out and you get a piece that could be Landeskog light and plug him in somewhere, but I don't think you mess too much with what's going on the top two lines, just because those are clicking all right. They're getting you through. Second place, second in the division's not a bad place to be. You don't need to win the division to win it all. So I mean, Colorado's in a good spot right now. I think what they really need the help in is in the backup goaltending. Georgiev is. He's good. I think they're putting too many games on him. They're making him start too many games because he has to. Otherwise, you got nothing else to put in there.
No, that's absolutely right. I mean, look, it also helps your Colorado. You have shaky goaltending maybe, but you also have the guy who right now, at this point, I believe is either the odds on or the second best odds to win the Hart Trophy.
Right.
And Nathan McKinn. So, mm-hmm. He's, he's flying right now. So it does help. To have that on your roster.
Oh, it does. Yeah. Have a McKinnon, a Makar on there. The kid plays great defense, but he definitely helps improve the odds on the offense as well.
Yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, having the second leading scorer among forwards and the second leading scorer amongst defensemen on your roster. Not a bad spot to be.
No, I'd take that any day.
Things you enjoy seeing if you're a Colorado Avalanche fan. Who else in the West do you think has moves to make?
Who else in the West?
Moves in terms of buying. Obviously, right. I think Vancouver probably made their move.
Absolutely. Vancouver made their move. I don't know if they can afford another move or do they need to make another move? They're playing extremely well right now. I think the only other team in the West that cracked my top three of buyers so far in the season, I think Nashville could make a move. They're in a weird position where if they get on a streak, they could sneak up and take a wild card. They're not going to crack the top three of that division. But they could get up and take a wild card away from the Pacific. But I don't know if they have the pieces to do that right now. And I think that's what they need to go out. They need to find a good second or third line forward to help increase the scoring for that club. And I think if they can do that, if they can find it for a good price, make that move, I think they're in the wild card mix.
Yeah, they're... I mean, right now it's they are 2 points behind the Kings and the Blues for the wild card spot, who are tied. The Kings, however, have 2 games in hand on the Blues, 3 on the Predators, and 3 on the Calgary Flames, who are on 55 points. The Wild are also on 55 points. So they've got the Kings and the Oilers both have games in hand on the teams above them. Right. I mean, the Oilers have 5 games in hand on Vancouver at 15 points down. Obviously, look, you win some of them, 4 points on Vegas. Edmonton's a prohibitive 2 seed. I mean, obviously, right now you're playing for home ice in the first round in an Edmonton Vegas series. And boy, would that be entertaining.
Oh, yeah. Right. Oh, Edmonton.
I mean,
Vegas.
this is where the playoff format is a killer.
Right. Cause at this point, that's what I would love to see as a possible Western Conference final.
Correct.
And said, we're going to get that first round.
Yep.
Yay.
Yeah. It's. But I geography rules.
Exactly. I definitely if Nashville's feeling like they want to try and compete in the postseason, go out, get some pieces, because they're there. This is a team I have not been able to read this season, but to me, they're just a couple of pieces away and they're a playoff contender. So they have moved to they're right behind Detroit on my buyer's list right now.
All right. Well, Richard.
Yeah.
It is that time.
It is that time. The PHN picks of the week. Oh, last time we met. Do we want to talk about the last time we met? Because it was the All-Star edition. And Adam did the best out of all seven picks that we made at 3-4. Good on him. I went 1-6. Lonnie, we don't need to talk about you.
Took the donut. Listen, I'll own it. I will say, I mean, lots of mistakes made. First of all, you and I made the mistake of picking a homer instead of going with logic for the $1 million winner.
Right.
I made the mistake of taking Kucherov in anything because he certainly didn't give a damn. I don't know why I did. That's it. That's what we do. Let's just call me the Nikita Kucherov of picks from the All-Star game.
I don't know. I would have been more impressed if you had taken Kucherov in stick handling, because that was quite the show that he put on. I would have given you a point for that one. All right. So new week, new picks, and Adam's not here to make his picks, so maybe we can make some ground on him, unless he's sent them in psychically or via text. We're
going to assume he just picked wrong on all of them, so it's
exactly.
Fine.
Exactly. All right. Game number one. We're going to start off with the yawner of the day, the stadium series that's going to happen later on Saturday. Philadelphia at New Jersey in the bright lights of MetLife Stadium. Lonnie, who do you have in this one?
I'm going to go... I'm going to go with Jersey.
All right.
For reasons that I'm not totally sure of, but.
I've been burned every time I have not taken the Flyers this season. And for some reason, they have not given me a lot of reason to pick them, especially when we have them in these picks. Yeah. I mean, they do have a better record on the road than at home, but they're playing in neither. So, I'll take Philly because otherwise I'm probably going to get burned.
The Devils also have a better record on the road than at home. So
exactly, yeah.
It's the home ice disadvantage normally. Who's going to embrace the being on the road more when they both embrace it? Who knows?
Who knows? All right, game number two. I like this matchup. Florida at Tampa Bay. Lonnie, who you got?
This is always a tasty one. Even though 9 points apart in the standings, this is still going to be so, so good. And they're both playing well, too. It's like neither team is playing bad.
No.
But Florida, both are great home teams. Florida on the road is... And Florida's even better on the road than at home. I'm taking the Panthers here.
Yeah. In this series, is anybody really on the road?
True.
I'm going to go Florida as well. They're playing phenomenal. Tampa Bay has stepped it up as well, but Florida having that great road record, I'm going to have to take them in that one. All right. Game number three, Edmonton at Dallas. Lonnie, what you got?
I desperately don't want to pick against Connor McDavid. After watching his 5-assist third period against the Red Wings the other night, he had 6 for the game, 5 in the third, and it was ridiculous. But they're very average on the road as well as they are playing right now. And Dallas is Dallas. I'm going with the Stars.
All right. Dallas is phenomenal at home. As you mentioned, Edmonton so-so on the road, but you know what? most of that is from the beginning of the season where they had that dreadful stretch. Then they won 16 games in a row and everything has balanced itself out in the universe. So I'm throwing away their records home and road because they're going to be below what they're playing right now. I'm going to go Edmonton. I think you had it right. Don't bet against Connor McDavid right now because odds are he's going to find a way to win that one. All right. Game number four, Nashville at St. Louis. Not quite game of the night like we saw in Edmonton at Dallas, but Nashville, St. Louis could still be a good game. Lonnie, who you got?
Could be a good game. I don't know if it will be a good game.
It has potential.
It has potential. I guess St. Louis because they're at home. But, I mean, these might be the two most difficult teams to try and read.
Yeah.
And they're both at home tonight. So... you know, and they're both, I mean, it's interesting. They're St. Louis is home to Edmonton, Nashville's at home to Dallas, and then, you know, those matchups cross over on Saturday. I guess I'm going to go St. Louis. I don't feel great about it, but.
Okay. I'm going to go Nashville just because you went with St. Louis. And
I kind of figured that.
Opposite of you.
Yeah. I mean, it really is such a coin flip of a game.
Yeah. But hey, it could be a very entertaining game nonetheless. If you have no investment in either club, it could be just fun to sit down and just watch some hockey. All right. Game number five. This one could also just be just a great, great game. Winnipeg at Vancouver. Lonnie, who you got?
Well, Winnipeg's getting a little bit of rest. They're coming up. They played a 1-0 barn burner against San Jose. Oh boy. I mean, on Wednesday night, that's not great. Vancouver is just tearing it up right now. And at home, I really tough not to go with the Canucks here.
Okay.
That is a tasty late night Canada game.
Oh yeah. That's a great way to cap off hockey night in Canada. I kind of wanted to go opposite with you on this one as well, but I can't go against Vancouver. They've been playing great all season long, but as of late they've been playing, it seems like, even better than they had started the season. So
also Winnipeg, no slouches in their own.
Oh, no. No disrespect to Winnipeg, or at least in that category, no disrespect to Winnipeg. They've been playing great as well. I mean, their road record 14-7-3. This one's hard to pick, but I can't pick against Vancouver right now. They're playing much better. All right. Those are our PHN picks of the week. If you want to follow us on Twitter, you can find us at PHN Podcast, and you can make your picks. Adam, if you're listening from Hawaii, you can make your picks using the hashtag PHN Picks.
All right. Parting thoughts. I guess we're going back to you to kick this one off. Richard, what do you got for this week?
Parting thoughts. Not much going on here in the Cote household. Just got a quick story to share. Becoming kind of a cool little tradition between Emily and Philip over Valentine's Day, which was yesterday, Wednesday the 14th. She started to take him out and continue a tradition that she had with her dad when she was a kid. And after work, after school, they'll go to a store and they'll find just a single toy, like nothing terribly expensive, but like maybe like a $10 toy or something. And something that just, sparks joy in his life that he just really wants to get. And he came back this year with, and this is not because he absolutely wanted it. He brought back home a small Lego set because he wanted us all to be able to build with him. He wanted to be able to share this with all of us. And that was just kind of a small little proud dad moment where I'm like, You're growing and maturing faster than I ever did at your age, kid. What? I'm glad you're learning from your mom, because you're not getting it from me. I don't know, you know, what she's doing right, but she's doing it right.
We are all glad for that. What a kid.
Yeah, right?
It's a good kid y'all are raising there. Nice job. Mine is not nearly as, you know, sweet. I had to use the snowblower today for the first time since probably about this time last year. We actually had measurable snowfall here. Got about 7 inches last night. I remembered how to use it, which is good, the snowblower. There is nothing more disarming than February 15th being the first time. This, you know, we are north of the 45th parallel. And that it's February 15th and I just now had to do anything to clear snow off my driveway in the morning this far into winter is just bodes terribly for what is to come with, you know, the environment and climate change and all of that. It's not great. It feels very foreboding,
but yeah,
at least there wasn't a snow day and my kid got out of the house. So that was a win.
That's great.
Well, thank you, Richard, again. Glad I could hopefully kept the show somewhat on the tracks in Adam's absence. Thanks to our sponsors, MyCustomSportsChair.com, Chicago Wolf Store, Foco, and Manscaped. We will see you again in 2 weeks. The first line will hopefully all be back together again on the Pro Hockey News Podcast. Take care, everyone.